I will be honest. This is not me walking it back. The criticism is that guy stank to high heaven for most of his time. And then in Cleveland. And then September ticked over, and it looks like I've got young Joe DiMaggio on the Cleveland Guardians. So that's coming up in a moment. Nick Wilson back with you here on Afternoon Drive. But Danny Cannell coming up in 40 minutes. We'll talk about this asinine theory that somebody on the show, not named Nick Wilson, floated, that we should be bored by the dominance of Ohio State. It was Keith. He's a Michigan fan. But myself and Spencer German cover everything from Ohio State to the biggest college football stories around the nation during the Sons of the Shoe podcast. We've our recent one tackled Western Michigan. We've got a Marshall conversation coming your way, including a conversation about Will Howard that I'm annoyed to be having two games in. Subscribe now on the Odyssey app to the Sons of the Shoe podcast, 92.3thefan.com, wherever you get your podcast, to make sure you have fresh episodes each week of the college football season. So we got that going for us. Oh, by the way, you can also follow us on the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel. Just search Sons of the Shoe or 92.3 The Fan on our YouTube channel there or on YouTube. Now, Guardians finished off the sweep against the White Sox, and I will tell you, still a little sloppy. And this is not a complaint. The number one thing here is you needed to go get a sweep, and you did get a sweep. But like today, you were up 5-0. And you probably should have beat him 10-0. And then Matthew Boyd inexplicably had a whoopsie daisy of an inning or two, which kind of reminded me of the night that Joey Cantillo had his 6 2/3 innings that were perfect, that totally matter, because you were up 5-0. And there was an inning where David Fry and Jose Ramirez ended the perfect opportunity to take that to another 10-0 game. And I know, like, what I'm saying now about the offense is what you can say about all offenses in baseball, especially if you are a contact offense or if you are I don't even know how I call them a contact offense now that I said. I know that you're not going to get runners in 100% of the time. There's still too much left on base, right? Runners in scoring position. There's still too much of that happening. But back to my apology on Lane Thomas. I don't know 9 games should be enough for me to remove a nickname, but considering it took me about 9 games to give him the nickname, it is important to say what Lane Thomas is doing right now is crucially important because the rest of the lineup is still struggling to find its footing. It's better than where it was 4 weeks ago, but Kwan still is not playing all that well, not playing consistently well, having consistently good at bats. They're still trying to figure out what they're doing in the 2 spot. Hosey's had his minutes. Naylor's had his minutes. There's really nobody other than Lane Thomas consistently putting it together over the last week to 2 weeks. Now, that's not as much of a concern because they're not all struggling in bunches, which is what happened in August and certainly in July as well. But Lane Thomas right now is giving you some ground fire to continue to work through some of the fundamental issues that this lineup has. And the fundamental issues aren't you don't have enough good hitters. I mean, you can never have too many good hitters, especially guys that can hit 40 home runs in a season, which they're short on. But I don't think the problem right now is a lack of decent players. I still think that the approach is a little lopsided. So Lane Thomas, who's now hitting 364 with a 1140 OPS in 9 games in September, is coming through in a big way. And it's interesting because I do feel like this changes on any given day. I also think that the Guardians in short form have been vindicated for the way they handled the deadline. Because Lane Thomas has turned a corner, Alex Cobb, when he's been in there, has given you every opportunity to win games, and Matthew Boyd, up until today, has been arguably your best pitcher all season long, albeit a much smaller sample size than Gavin Williams or Tanner Bibee. I do wonder, though, because now the Guardians are 4 games up in the Central off Kansas City, Minnesota is dangerously close to falling out of the divisional race and out of the wild card race. They are the sixth team in the wild card right now. So the last team in the playoffs, and they've got three games off of they're just three games up off Detroit. They're four games up off Boston, four games up off Seattle. Specifically Detroit and Boston, I don't know Minnesota's going to be able to hold them off. All of a sudden, Minnesota needs that series in Cleveland coming up, the four-game set. They need to take three of four just to stay in the division and maybe to go ahead and stay in the playoffs altogether. For the Guardians, you've got a 99.9% chance of making the playoffs. And now that we're there, I think their magic number has to be at 6 or 7 now after today. I'm trying to figure that out in real time is a kick in the ass, so I'm not going to try and do that because I'd sound dumber than I normally do. But when we have that conversation, I think the Guardians are in a really interesting spot right now, trying to walk a line of clinching the division, making sure that you're continuing to be in a position for the top two spots in the American League, which allows you the direct pass to the ALDS. I think this is the third year that we've done this, third or fourth year that baseball's done the playoffs this way, and also continuing to get healthy and to get right. And there is a part of me that if any part of Stephen Kwan's struggles are due to an injury, if it's an injury that can be helped by multiple days off in a row or resting for a short amount of time or a short IL stint, they're kind of in a difficult spot because with 3 weeks to go, if Kwan could benefit, if you could get Kwan ready for the postseason by a 10-day trip to the IL, that might take you and put you in, it might diminish your chances, although albeit slightly, of getting a top two seed, but it also might help you in the playoffs. And I've started to think because he's not pushing the ball the other way, I don't think that's just about hitting home runs. Stephen Kwan is too smart of a guy to not have figured out. If this was about his form, how he approaches things, his philosophy, trying to hit too many home runs, I think it would have gone the way of the dodo right now. And I wonder if Lane Thomas, formerly known as Lemon Law Lane, there's a part of me that wonders if you have a chance there to move Lane up if you think that this is more than just a quick run from him. 216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. So it also has me wondering how important the division is and how important getting that top two seed is. Because I'll be honest with you guys, I want to win the Central because it's the only way you're going to get a top two seed. I understand that we're in a point with the new playoff format that the returns are not entirely positive, that if you get a top two seed, that you advance to the ALDS, that you actually then have an easier chance to advance to the ALCS in the World Series. I do understand that. I'm going to cry sample size there. I totally understand that so much of baseball is how hot are you in the moment and how healthy are you, right? Whether it's your rotation, a team like the Guardians, but Boyd's performance today makes you wonder if maybe this is fatigue or something else with him. Gavin has had his clunkers here and there. I mean, you're not out of the woods health-wise, and certainly in the rotation, there's nothing about this team that makes you feel they're 100% healthy. This being said, I understand the idea of, man, you almost would rather play in the wild card round because you want to try and continue momentum. To hell with that. Because here's the thing, if you're the number one seed or the number two seed in the American League, and you get to bypass the first round of the playoffs, and then you lose in the ALDS, it's one of two things. Either you got the bad matchup coming out of the first round, which is possible. It matchups matter in baseball in the playoffs, especially early in the playoffs, as much as anything. I'll probably say more later in the playoffs, but I mean, it's entirely possible to get the worst six seed matchup you can possibly have if you're the one seed. And right now, The Guardians are the one seed. They got it by half a game over the Yankees. So that means the Guardians are one, the Yankees are two, Baltimore's three, KC four, Houston five, and Minnesota six. But I think there's been a lot of jostling, a lot of conversation. I've certainly had it with my friends about, well, would you rather have the one seed or the two seed? Because if you have the two seed, like right now, Baltimore would have to face either Baltimore or Minnesota. We're going to say they'd have to play Minnesota. Or they're going to have to say they had to play Baltimore. And then they have to turn around in the next round if you play and they beat Baltimore and face either Cleveland or Houston. No offense, Kansas City, but offense taken. So if you're New York and you have to beat Baltimore and Houston to then get to the World Series, that's a lot. Even if you get that free pass. At the same point, if you're Cleveland, like, whether you have to play Baltimore and then New York or Houston, like, I think I'm starting to ramble here. The point is, there's a lot of creative math going on right now about what's the best. We're not going to know. We're going to know what the most preferable matchups are for the Guardians about 7 days out. When we start to really, and listen, the AL Central or the AL East is probably going down to the final day. The 1, 2, and 3 seeds and potentially the 4 seed with Houston. I mean, Houston's 7 games off. Yeah, I don't know about that. But the first 3 seeds of this thing are going down to the final wire. And so this is a long-winded way of saying the importance of getting the 2 seed right now. As much as momentum is a thing that I believe in when it comes to baseball in September. And honestly, I believe more about negative momentum. Like if you are completely unhealthy or you were just playing god-awful baseball, I think that tends to be the thing that matters the most. I think if you're playing 500 ball going into it, I don't think that's going to wreck you. I don't think it's ever been more important for this team to get the first 5 days of the playoffs scot-free of having to play. They're not the most banged-up team. They're not playing the worst baseball either. As a matter of fact, they're playing 700 ball in their last 10 games. But I think we've reached a point where even if you have a little falter in momentum, not having to play the extra games in the first round and having the opportunity to stay healthy, honestly, is even more important than who do you match up with in a potential second round. It's very rare we get to say that. But the Guardians are playing just good enough baseball. And their style is pretty universal. Like, there are going to be, I mean, if a team's got 340 home run hitters, that's tough for anybody to beat. But the reality is, because they're a team that is as complete as it gets, their lineup is just good enough, their rotation is just good enough, and they have an elite bullpen, I actually think that makes them a tougher out in the playoffs. And I think a team like New York or Baltimore more has to worry specifically about matchups early in the playoffs. 216-474-0092. What should be the focus of the next 3 weeks here? Making sure, locking in one of those top two seeds or trying to get as right and as healthy as you possibly can get going into the playoffs in the event you have to go to the wild card. I got to say, guys, I think I'm going to err on the side of keep just playing good baseball and try and rest up when you finally do land one of the top two seeds. That's the latest on the Guardians. I'm not going to be the person that comes out and says that the Dallas game should change your expectations for the season, whether it's Deshaun or for the Browns. You've probably already formulated your opinion on Deshaun. I think a fair amount. I have tried to do the opposite because I don't think if every conversation on Deshaun came down to he's cooked or no, he's not. I've tried to remain Switzerland in this. It's been tough, but I've tried to. But I do think, like, you know, the Dallas game isn't going to change anybody's mind because there was nobody left on the fence. There's like me and like four other human beings on the fence just waiting for the switch to flip with Deshaun Watson. Everybody has taken an angle, which made the panic coming out of the Dallas game even more interesting because I think it was people waiting for the negative outcome. And I don't know that there would be as much Like, if the opposite thing had happened, Deshaun had played really well and you beat Dallas, I don't know that the response would have been as explosive in the positive as it was in the negative. Because I think we've just gotten to the point where there's so much overwhelming negative, right? And it's to the point where we've reduced even Deshaun's best games in Cleveland to, well, it's one good half against Baltimore. It was the Cardinals sucked and was Clayton Tune, and that was at home, by the way. Oh, but Tennessee has one good half. And the reality is, you can literally say that with any quarterback in the NFL. You can pick apart. Joe Burrow has strings of games where he's good in a quarter and bad in three quarters, or good in the first half and bad in the second half. And I'm not, this is not a defense of Deshaun. It is more to continue to come back to whatever is going to reverse the inertia that has swung to this degree with Deshaun and the Browns. It's going to have to be significant. So I'm not here to tell you that as we go on to Jacksonville, all of a sudden, that Deshaun has a great game and bad feelings gone. But I'm also not going to paint Jacksonville as a must-win game. One, because must-win has become cliche at this point. You know, it's just another expression in sports talk, the way that you and I say at the end of the day, casually in conversation, or honestly, or legitimately, or any of the other crutch phrases we have that are cliche in American culture. So to say a game on September 15th is must win, it would be silly for me as a alleged professional broadcaster to do. But I get it if you think so. I get it if you look at this game and go that you are going that you for your own psyche, you need Deshaun to be the reason you win against Jacksonville this weekend. And that the more bad that comes in with Deshaun, the greater the great has to be when he bounces back. And also, Real Savior P on Twitter saying, I need Watson to bounce back because my non-victory lap is going to be epic. I mean, listen, you're gonna have a hell of a victory lap there, Real Savior P, if Deshaun does end up working out, especially from here. So I'm not saying that Jacksonville is a must-win game. But I get it if you think that it's pretty critically important, or if you personally, as a fan, want to say that. What I will say is, I don't. This is not about wins and losses. I know we do the 0-2 thing. Well, you know, teams that have started out 0-2 are X percentage less likely. They've got this percent chance to make the playoffs. I get that. The reality is you can't be worried about the playoffs on September 15th. You can't. You're just trying to get right. You're just trying to get where you need to be. So it's not about the playoffs for me. It's not about, you know, you still have three games after this one between the Giants, Raiders, and Commanders that each one of those games is going to give you a chance to get right if you can't get right this weekend against Jacksonville. And even if you start 0-2, you could be 3-2 by the time you face Philadelphia on October 13th. All that being said, do you know why I think this game is so important? And if you want to call it a must-win, sure, go with that verbiage or whatever dire language we use. Because I think Deshaun's teammates need it. I think Deshaun needs it. You know, if you watch that game in Dallas, I mean, I had a friend text me. He's like, I watched the tape. And I was like, I don't think we needed to. I think you could have just watched the game wherever you were. You could have watched, and just, there was such little positive to gleam, especially on the offensive side. I don't know. We needed to go back, but I did. And the second viewing kind of looked worse than the first when you really pay attention to the details. But I do believe Deshaun in that clip that, well, hey, I take these guys at face value. They come up to my locker. They say they got love for me. They say I'm behind you. And that's what you have to say if you're an NFL teammate. But it's going to get progressively harder and harder and harder with each of these weeks. Now that there are new allegations as well, which is another stone on top, you know, more pressure on this situation, on this team, on that locker room. And then you add losing to it, and losing brings out the worst in everyone. Must win is far-fetched. But do I think of all the teams in the NFL, the Browns need a win more than anybody this weekend. Yes. Yes. Deshaun needs a good performance. This team needs to bounce back, because if you thought week one, if you thought Monday, if you thought the criticism the Browns are undertaking week one was untenable, wait till you start 0-3. Wait till you start 1-4. With this hanging over Deshaun, with this hanging over that locker room, it's not a must win. But I don't know there's a team in the NFL that needs a win more than the Cleveland Browns.